Susan Hassenmiller is a nurse by training, but one day 3 years ago, she found herself on the other side of the healthcare relationship when her husband was severely injured in a bicycling collision. The care her husband received and the occasional lack of compassion she felt became the subject of a new book, Resetting, An Unplanned Journey of Love, Loss, and Living Again. She was on Oahu earlier this month and spoke with the conversation's Jason Ubai about her story and the importance of compassion in healthcare, a story that has a particular resonance in these days of the novel coronavirus.
Going back to my beginning nursing career, I certainly took care of a lot of people and a lot of people who were in the process of dying and who did die. And I'm really here to talk about compassion on the front lines because 3.5 years ago, even though I was used to, as a nurse, taking care of people who had died and dealing with grieving families, I really didn't know until it happened to me 3.5 years ago where I lost my husband. I didn't really realize the true grieving response that people went through and how important it is as healthcare clinicians that we address people with as much compassion as possible. So that is why I'm really here.
What were some eye-opening experiences? What made you think differently from moving from a professional to a personal role?
So my husband was in a bicycle accident. We really don't know what happened to him. We know that he was found on the side of the road. We know that he was due at a certain time to pick me up at a medical conference that I was supposed to be at. And when that time came and then went, I was really worried because my husband was very, very responsible individual. And I had noticed at the end of this medical conference that I was at that a couple of phone calls had come in. And I looked down at my phone and I began to be very worried after 10, 15 minutes went by. So I decided to make a call back to that number. And when I called back, it was the trauma center of a local hospital telling me to come in as soon as possible, that my husband was in a severe bicycle accident. And when I asked to speak to him, the nurse in charge says, I really can't get a phone to him. And I knew that was a lie because I knew, as you know, we're all carrying around cell phones. You can definitely get a phone to someone if they were able to speak. And that's when I knew it was very serious. When I came to my husband, I learned that he was an instant quadriplegic. If you remember Christopher Reeves, quadriplegia, couldn't really live without a breathing machine. That was my husband. And so it was very shocking to me to see that. Of course, as I said before, I had taken care of a lot of these patients. When you're a family member, it is so completely, completely different. You go into family member mode. You still have your mind and wits about you, your medical background. And I had my expectations about how we would be treated. And you know, it was startling to me. My husband got really good clinical care, and I should say that this is not necessarily a good news story because my husband lived as a quadriplegic for 10 days, and then I had to be the one to turn off his breathing machine. So in those 10 days, it was quite startling to me to see as a nurse the clinicians, the doctors, the nurses, the residents, all these people gathered around their computers every morning talking to themselves and talking to their computers and looking at my husband's latest lab results, but not really coming into the room necessarily and seeing my husband. There were a few people during that time who showed immense compassion. But my general impressions were, in this era of precision medicine and artificial intelligence and, you know, quality and safety and all those new things that we want to make sure that we handle as clinicians, the compassion piece was primarily missing, and I was startled and saddened by the whole thing. I think that all of us are in the position where, of course, we would say, just save my husband's life, just save my child's life, right? We are in that position. First and foremost, we want the life saved. But in the meantime, remember that just days before, my husband was this you know, 6'4", 240-pound man who was in the prime of his life, who was physically active. And, you know, I had all the pictures laid out on the bedside stand. And I wanted somebody to say, ah, so this was your husband. This was your husband. What do you think, you know, he would, because he couldn't speak. And so between not speaking to him and sometimes not speaking to me, it was very hard to feel the care, as I think as an initial nurse, I tried to convey to my patients. So I didn't feel the care factor, if you will.
If you can go back, could you talk about some of the healthcare professionals that you thought did provide some great examples of compassion for you?
So there were two nurses in particular who really provided a great deal of compassion. And when I talk about compassion, it's really interesting these days because, you know, as I talk about compassion on the front lines and I do presentations, I hear nurses and sometimes physicians come back to me and say, the healthcare environment is so chaotic these days. There's so much we have to do. The computers and the electronic health records and everything that we have to accomplish in a day, it's just too hard. I can't be compassionate. And I'm thinking, whoa, you can't be compassionate. Wow. But as I did a lot of research into this, I have learned and I have come to believe and know that you can show compassion in a few seconds. So the two nurses in particular that showed compassion to me, one in particular was a nurse anesthetist, and she was the first receiving nurse in the trauma center when my husband came in. And afterwards, when my husband was all settled in the bed and had all these machines going and buzzing and alarms going off, and I was just crazy with fear and worry, she came to me and she simply said, I hate that you're going through this. I wish I could take all this pain away from you. And she handed me a glass of water and a granola bar. And she said, I'm here for you if you need me. And then later on, she sort of broke some rules. She got to know my husband a little better. And she contacted me by email and said, I'm still thinking of you and your situation. And if there's anything I can do, but I just want you to know I'm thinking of you. How long did this take? Did it not take me 10 seconds to describe this to you? And there was another nurse, Kathy, and she was the nurse with me on the 10th day of my husband's hospitalization when I decided the day before that my husband would never want to live this way. My husband's systems were failing one by one by one, his kidneys and his heart and his liver, everything was failing. And my husband and I had a living will. Let's take note of that. I would say that that's something that everyone should have, advanced directives and living wills, so that if your spouse or a loved one gets into this situation, you know what they want. I knew full well from a discussion with my husband and what he had written, he would never want to live this way. So on the 9th day, I asked all of the people who gathered around in the hallway every day, who had white coats and stethoscopes on, and they sat and stood in front of their computers and they talked to their computers. I called them the intimidators. I asked them on the 9th day, is there anybody at this facility who can help me make a decision about my husband and whether he should live or die? What's going on here? And they said, what do you mean? I said, somebody to help me make this decision. So they referred me to palliative care. So on the 10th day, we decided that that was going to be the day when I turned off my husband's machine. And it was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my entire life. But there was one nurse who stood by me, and little by little, she explained to me what would happen as you dial down the oxygen that was going into my husband's lungs. If you dial that down, he would just continue to be short of breath, and she described this to me. And then hours and hours went by, and there was a frustration in the room. And Kathy, the nurse, told me, wow, your husband must have been in great shape. He must have had such a strong heart. I can see that from the pictures, the bicycle pictures. So she took personal note, right? She took personal note. She said, it's hard. He's not giving up because his heart is so strong. And I wanted to lay next to my husband in his last hours. And she helped me move my husband to one side of the bed so that I could lay next to him in his last hours because his brain was still there. He knew what was going on. And then as it was getting closer to the time, she kept dialing down and dialing down. And she said, you know, he's so strong. He's just holding on. And she would come over to him and say, Bob, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay to let go. Sue and I are here, and it's okay to let go. And, you know, I saw that her shift was going to end, right? Because the nurses work from 7 to 7. And I saw that her shift was going to end. And she stayed with me this whole day and night. And I was so just distraught at the fact that this one nurse who was with me at this hardest moment of my life was going to end her shift and go. And she had her coat on and she had her purse wrapped around her. And she was saying goodbye to me. And my husband was still hanging on. And she was trying to talk to the next nurse who I didn't care about because I didn't know that nurse. She tried to talk to that next nurse about what was happening. And I looked at Kathy and I said, will you stay? Will you stay with me? And she ripped off her coat and threw off her purse. And she said, I'll stay with you. So she stayed a couple of hours past her shift until finally the machine was completely turned off and my husband was gone. But at that moment, her compassion and her willingness to stay, and I know it may have been just an hour of her time, but it meant the world to me, what Abby and Kathy did for me. Most people who took care of my husband, again, I want to say he got great clinical care. They did try to save his life. But people, just eye contact, right? The simplest notion of eye contact and looking away from your computer, tiny little things that we as clinicians, and I put myself in that, take for granted to just get our job done. You know, make sure all the boxes are checked. But if you can just look and touch. Touch is so important to people. Just putting your hand on someone's arm. And that's something that Kathy did. She knew that my husband could only feel above his, his neck and his head. So she would rub his head. So the tiniest little things that most people don't do. There's a saying that I've come to learn in healthcare that we as clinicians and patients and consumers should sort of demand, if you will. But instead of asking someone, what's the matter with you? You should be asking people, what matters to you? What matters to you in this moment? And it may not be what we as clinicians have to offer, but it may mean something huge to that person that's going to make the biggest difference in their health and recovery and well-being. Now, my husband did not recover, but most people do. Most people do.
With the coronavirus currently in the news, what can you say about the compassion maybe we should be showing each other and healthcare professionals should be showing?
So I'm not an expert in coronavirus, but I am a healthcare professional, and I know certainly the basics. There's a lot of fear and worry in our world. This is hitting not only the healthcare industry, but the tourist industry here in Hawaii, and the banking industry, the Department of Transportation and planes. It's hitting everything. But what it comes down to is basic human life. Let's talk about that, the basic human life. There's a lot of misinformation out there now. So we should all know the facts. Go to sources that are reliable. The Centers for Disease Control is a very reliable source in Hawaii. I would imagine it would be if you went to the Hawaii State Health Department. So make sure that you know the most accurate, up-to-date information. We do have to follow basic rules of hygiene that most of us take for granted. Me, for example, I've never washed my hands so many times in my entire life, even when I was a practicing nurse. So that's really, really critically important. And I think really paying attention to people. If you notice that someone is sick in your family, a colleague, making sure, especially in this era of coronavirus, that they're getting these things checked out. It might be a simple cold. It might be the flu. It might be the coronavirus.
Can you tell me about the book, Resetting, An Unplanned Journey of Love, Loss, and Living Again?
It was really important to me as a healthcare professional and as a wife, a loving wife, to really convey the story of compassion and what it's like to have someone in the hospital, what it's like to lose someone, what it's like to go through that grieving process, because no one really knows until you've gone through it. That much I absolutely know. So probably for my own sense of well-being, but I will tell you, when I was going through all of this, I had a blog. I had more than 1,000 people who were following my story for a year about what was going on with my husband and then with my life, the grief journey, and then this notion of compassion at the front lines. And so I made a goal for myself that in 2019, I was going to write a book, because people who were following that blog said, oh my God, you're helping me so much. I know now how to talk to my aunt who just lost my uncle. I know now how to talk to my clients, you know, if they were psychologists or pastors. Everybody was using what I was putting forward in a blog about how to be helpful. So many people were telling me, you need to write a book, you need to write a book, and I've never written a book before. But I said, by golly, if this is helping 1,000 people, I want to help multiple thousands of people. So I made a goal for myself to write a book. I found a publishing company who accepted the manuscript, which basically is my journal of what I lived through every day for a year, and then some reflections on the learnings.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
So happy to be here.
Susan Hassmiller, Senior Advisor for Nursing at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Her book, Resetting, An Unplanned Journey of Love, Loss, and Living, out on April 14th. You can listen to that entire interview at hawaiipublicradio.org.